Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, the Dodgers lose a close one to the Mets, but why maybe facing DeGrom in the playoffs wouldn't be the absolute worst thing. We'll get into that. We'll get into Gavin Lux and Freddie Freeman and maybe a bond that we don't really know is there. And then we'll get into Miguel Vargas and Blake Treinen. Coming reinforcements are here. We'll get into all that. So that's what's on tap. So make sure to keep it Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers. Your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yo, 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 Dodger fans, welcome to Locked On Dodgers. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Vroom. With Vroom, you can buy a car entirely online and have it delivered straight to you so you never have to go to a dealership again. So next time you need to buy a car, just grab your phone, go to vroom.com, and check out thousands of great cars. We are Locked On Dodgers, and we are here for you every Monday through Friday for about 30 minutes. You can find us wherever you find podcasts and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. If this is your first time listening or watching, I'm Vince Samperio. That's my co-host, Jeff Snyder. We are both lifelong Dodger fans that cover the Dodgers currently and in the past. Have spent time in the locker room and the press box, but we're not quite insiders. We're just here. Two smart fans bringing the smart fans perspective on our boys in blue every weekday morning. And we're here to talk about the Dodgers versus the Mets last night and then a few other things about Gavin Lux and Miguel Vargas and Blake Treinen and some other guys trying to come back from injury. But first, Jeff, Dodgers did end up losing 2-1 to the Mets last night. Jacob DeGrom went 7 innings, gave up 1 run, struck out 9. Would have given up 2 runs if it wasn't for an incredible play by Brandon Nimmo that saved a run and ultimately was a difference in the game. But as we talked about, kind of, you know, yes, the Dodgers lost, but Jacob DeGrom versus Tyler Anderson was a 2-1 game and kind of shows a little bit of what I mentioned yesterday of it's not DeGrom versus Anderson, it's DeGrom versus the Dodgers offense and Anderson versus the Mets offense.
Yeah, absolutely. The Dodgers were, you know, Justin Turner hit the ball 410 feet. If he hits it 411 feet, that's a tie game. And, you know, the Dodgers don't lose to DeGrom. Who knows what happens if they tie it up. But and if Tyler Anderson, I mean, he threw one hanging changeup, and that was the difference of the game. I mean, it was a rough stretch there in the third inning. You know, give him up 4 straight hits, including a 2-run homer. But other than that, he was outstanding. He made it through 7 innings. If they needed him to, he could have gotten another one, probably pitch count wise. And yeah, I mean, it was a, even though the Dodgers lost, it left me feeling a little bit more confident about if the Dodgers do face DeGrom or face the Mets in the postseason. You know, at most, you're going to see DeGrom twice in a series. And I have plenty of confidence that the Dodgers could steal at least one of those two games against DeGrom in the postseason because they almost stole this one. And, you know, you had Cody Bellinger in there. You had Joey Gallo in there who, if they're not performing, they're not going to be in the lineup in the postseason. They're going to be putting out their best hitters in a postseason lineup. Plenty of reasons to think that if the Dodgers were trying harder, you know, and that it sounds like a lame homer excuse. And I don't mean it that way, you know, well, the Dodgers didn't even try. That's what they lost. Obviously they wanted to win the game, but their priorities right now are on getting ready for October, as we've talked about several times on this show. And their priority wasn't let's do everything we can to beat Jacob DeGrom tonight. And if they face him in the postseason, their entire number one focus, the only focus will be let's do everything we can to beat Jacob DeGrom tonight. And I think that ends up differently, you know. I mean, Trey Turner's not going to look that bad in most games. You know, he's actually had not a ton of success. Nobody has a ton of success against DeGrom, but Turner's done okay against DeGrom in his past and just didn't this time. In his career, he's got a, you know, a 608 OPS against him, but, you know, he looked helpless against DeGrom in this game. He's actually homered off DeGrom in the past, you know. And so Turner's too good a hitter to be held down like that, so. Yeah, I think if the Dodgers face the Mets in a series and face DeGrom twice, the Dodgers win one of the games. And if you can win one of the DeGrom games, you're pretty well set up for the series.
And what Dave Roberts said and kind of what we talked about yesterday was this is more – obviously, yes, you want to win, and obviously it would have been ideal if these guys would have scored a bunch of runs. But in the grand scheme of things, we just saw this happen where the Dodgers knocked out Sandy Alcantara in one game, kept him, he didn't even go five innings, four innings, and then he went the whole nine against him the next time. So we, you know, if the Dodgers face DeGrom again, do I think they're going to knock him out in the fourth inning? No, but I do think they probably have better success. And what Dave Roberts kind of mentioned was it's kind of a, you know, I don't remember the exact wording, fact finding or fact gathering or something to that extent of just, yeah, getting to see him. They haven't seen him this season yet. They didn't see him last season, I don't believe, because he was hurt and or he just didn't face the Dodgers. So it's a matter of, yeah, you haven't seen this guy. You're going to see how he can attack you and, you know, figure it out. And then the next time you face him, you have a little bit different plan. Now, obviously, he can make adjustments and change his plan, but just a matter of just seeing it. You know, there's a reason to seeing guys multiple times and how that affects you. And, you know, it works in one time, two time, three times through a lineup, but it can also work, you know, one time, two time, three times in a season you see him. So we'll see what happens. But one guy that did get the big hit off DeGrom, or the only run for the Dodgers, was Mookie Betts, who hit a home run, 32nd of the season, tying his career high, and just adds to the year Mookie's had. And you know exactly what the Dodgers were hoping to get when they traded for Mookie Betts and signed him to the long-term deal. And it's been a joy to watch him in the leadoff role kind of take off.
Yeah, absolutely. And the crazy thing is, this was only his 111th game of the season. You know, he's missed some time, and yet he has 32 home runs. He's on pace to hit 40 home runs. And even though he missed a few weeks, that's pretty remarkable. It's been a different kind of season for him. But if you compare, you know, obviously it ties his career high, which was set in 2018. The reason Mookie won the MVP that year is because he also led the major leagues in batting average and slugging percentage, batted 346 that year. The other year that he hit 30 home runs, 31 in 2016, he batted 318. So this year has been a little bit different in that way. He's had the lower batting average, not a bad batting average by any means at all, but, you know, lower than those other 30 home run seasons. And it's just kind of the evolution of Mookie Betts. He's been outstanding. And if you look at OPS plus, this is tied for his second best season, and, you know, tied with 2020, the shortened season when he was awesome. The only season he's had that was better than this year was the year he won the MVP. And plus he's been great defensively. Mookie has been, you know, everything that we hoped he would be when the Dodgers traded for him. And yet still, there's still plenty of room to think, oh, he could be better than this, because he has, you know, batted close to 350 in a season, and this year he's around 280. You know, he could be getting more hits. He could be doing this, doing that. And so it's kind of at the same time a wonderful, awesome season and a sign of, wow, and things could even get better.
Yeah, and what we article recently came out about the Dodgers offense and just, you know, kind of them as a whole. And, you know, we've seen him swing the bat early in counts a lot lately. And that's been something that, you know, Trey Turner, Freddie Freeman, the kind of article was surrounding around them. And, you know, they kind of told Mookie, like, you know, go ahead. You don't need to be that guy. You know, the leadoff spot, yeah, you can be a guy that takes some pitches, sees what he's got, and relay it back. But if you see a pitch that you can hit early in the count, go and get it. And we've seen that. When you look at his last 30 games, he's hitting over 300, slugging over 660, nine homers, 18 RBIs. Like, he's, and a lot of those have been early in the count, you know, 1-1, 0-1, first pitch, whatever the case is. So this team as a whole, and we'll get into this a little bit more later with Freeman and Lux, but this team as a whole is working together. They have that chemistry. They have that camaraderie. They're helping each other out. And, you know, whether, you know, Mookie was going to get his regardless, but him having the confidence and, hey, you know, the guy that's sitting behind me says, go ahead. I don't need you to take pitches for me. I don't need you to, like, analyze too much. I want you to just go out there and hit, and we'll figure the rest out later. And that's what it's done. And you know, we've seen Mookie take off power-wise the last month and a half. But definitely, like you said, I mean, he's been out a few weeks, and he didn't homer like the first 3 weeks of this, or didn't homer more than a handful of times the first 3-4 weeks of the season. So he could have easily been around 50 home runs if he would have been like this, you know, throughout the entire year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been awesome. And yeah, you mentioned Turner and Freeman, like, they've had an influence on him. Specifically, he's watched how they approach, you know, Trey Turner is aggressive. It's a running joke in my family. You know, we'll be watching the game, and my son's, oh, look, look at that. Trey's in an 0-2 count. You know, that's just what Trey Turner does. You know, Justin Turner always fouls one off to the right and always takes a strike. Trey Turner is always in an 0-2 count. He might as well just start there, you know. But that's because he's swinging the bat. You know, he's fouling off the first pitch. He's not taking pitches. He's boom. He's swinging. And Freeman too, you know, he's a more patient hitter than Trey, but he's also aggressive on that first pitch. And that's what Mookie looked and saw, man, I am getting a lot of first pitch strikes. And I think every Dodger fan can think back to last year when Mookie wasn't playing his best and thinking, man, he is taking a lot of pitches right down the middle. And I like aggressive Mookie.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get into more about Freddie Freeman and kind of a relationship he might have with Gavin Lux, or does have with Gavin Lux. But let's thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen of the day every day. Are you one of those people who thinks it's okay to drive stoned? What's the worst that can happen? You end up driving below the speed limit? No big deal, right? Well, that's wrong. The truth is your reaction time slows down when you're high. You not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. Talk about a buzzkill. Stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. All right, Jeff. So we're back. And as we alluded to, Freddie Freeman has been helpful in a variety of ways. And one of those ways could be with one of the Dodgers' young talents in Gavin Lux. And I know that you had seen some notes or some quotes about this relationship and kind of how Lux has been this season from Dave Roberts. So I'll hand it over to you to read those.
Yeah. After Tuesday night's game, when Gavin Lux had the two big hits, he had a 2-run single to give the Dodgers their first lead. And then an RBI single to give the Dodgers their final lead of the game, drove in all three runs that weren't driven in on a hit by pitch, came for Gavin Lux. And after the game, Dave Roberts was talking about Lux and specifically about the impact Freddie Freeman has had on him. He said, I think he's sort of a Freddie Freeman light. He's really seen firsthand what Freddie does on a daily basis. And I think if there's any one mentee that has kind of gone under Freddie's wing, it's Gavin. That's the preparation each day. Even that last pop-up by Trace Thompson, he's running full bore around third base. And that's the stuff that Freddie does. The at-bat quality of being able to kind of check down and drive a run in by shortening your swing, it's what Freddie does. I know Gavin is on the right track and his growth has been exponential. He's going to be big for us. And, you know, a couple things jumped out at me about this. And maybe it was that Robert specifically mentioned the hustle that my mind went to Chase Utley. I've thought about the Dodgers have had several of these veteran leadership mentor kind of people. You know, remember when Utley came over and, you know, Corey Seager and Kiki Hernandez specifically really like took to Chase Utley and several other guys too. You know, Chase Utley was really a mentor to them. Albert Pujols last year, totally that role. You know, everybody loved Albert and learned from him. He was huge for a lot of the guys. David Freese, Russell Martin. Over the years, they've had these veteran leadership guys who are providing, you know, probably more value in the clubhouse and in the dugout than they are on the field. Well, Freddie Freeman's filling that role, but also he's still one of the best hitters in baseball. And so it's kind of remarkable to me that you're getting, you know, it's like, you know, Shohei Ohtani, you get a pitcher and a hitter. Well, Freeman, you get a great ball player and a great mentor. And he didn't have to wait till he was all washed up and came to the Dodgers. He came to the Dodgers in, you know, close to his prime and being that mentor. And, you know, we've seen, there's been stories about Mookie and what he's learned from Freeman. There's been stories about Trey and Freeman playing off each other and getting better from each other. You know, Freddie Freeman seems to make everybody around him better. And I think that's pretty awesome. And especially it specifically being Lux, because Freeman and Lux don't have much in common except that they both throw right and bat left. But I think the bat left thing might actually be a big deal, because if there's one thing that's going to determine how much playing time Gavin Lux gets in his career, it's how well can you hit lefties. And Freddie Freeman is great at hitting lefties. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Gavin Lux is hitting lefties really well this year, almost as well as hitting righties. Doesn't have quite as much power against them, but batting average and on base percentage are almost identical between lefties and righties. And I think some of that is because he's watching Freddie Freeman's approach and, you know, how Freeman stays in the box against lefties and all of that. And, you know, Lux hit lefties well in the minors, so it's not like this is unprecedented, but he didn't hit lefties well in his first couple seasons with the Dodgers. And so that's been a big improvement this year. And I think it might be as simple as that. Like Lux sees, wow, this is a guy who is what I need to be as a hitter, and I'm going to learn from him.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, not having watched the Braves too much the last, you know, few years when Freddie's been around, other than when the Dodgers play them or in the playoffs, I don't know. Freddie, for some reason, didn't scratch me as like one of those mentor guy. He seemed more like a lead by example type rather than lead by, you know, speaking or whatever else the case is. Mookie Betts, kind of that guy as well. He was more of a lead by example guy when he came over. And what we've seen, and you know, whether it, you know, obviously it has a lot to do with just the locker room, the dynamics, how comfortable, you know, the Dodgers make everyone feel. Dave Roberts has a hand in it. Where we've seen Mookie Betts step up into more of a leadership role, being a little bit more outspoken, and definitely, you know, we've seen it off the field as well, being more outspoken in different subjects off the field. You know, Freddie Freeman as well. I don't know how he was in Atlanta, but at least here we've seen that he's been more of that guy, you know, the mentor role type, but also, you know, like you mentioned, just still playing MVP caliber baseball. And for Lux, I mean, that's big. There's, as a younger player who comes up with the Dodgers, I feel like you know, you kind of try to find someone in similar roles with you. So, you know, let's just say, you know, McKinstry had come up, he'd probably talk to like Chris Taylor. Hey, how do you handle playing all these different positions? And the Dodgers have a lot of those, a lot of different guys that are in a lot of different roles that they can look up to. But Lux didn't necessarily have someone. And whether it's from, you know, whether it's just the left side thing, whether if it's just, you know, whatever, obviously Lux grew up, he matured in a lot of different ways. He mentioned it. There's been mentioned in the past, you know, in his approach. But, you know, maybe Freddie Freeman was that guy where he gravitated towards him and he kind of said, hey, I want to be like you. I want to hit like you, whatever the case is. And I want to slow the game down. Because I think when you look at Freddie, when he's at the plate, the game looks a little bit slower. And you know, it feels like he's at the plate for 5 minutes every time he bats for the most part. Even if he swings at the first pitch, he's in control when he's at the plate. I think that's what Lux didn't have. Lux was kind of more trying to hope that his reaction and his athletic talent and ability was going to take over. And it doesn't always work out that way. And you need, you know, something to help you out. And whether, you know, combination of everyone, just, you know, whether it was Freddie that just had the special, you know, word of it or whatever the case is, it's worked out and it's helped out. And, you know, it's one of those where now he can pass that on to someone else and he can figure it out. And if he can sustain this, then obviously the Dodgers are in good shape regardless. And, you know, it helps the Dodgers out too, because let's just say they don't re-sign Trey Turner. They don't find, or they don't go get one of the big shortstops. They can feel confidence in Lux being able to handle shortstop and still be a good enough hitter to warrant him playing there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you talk about these guys finding their leadership voice here with the Dodgers. Like, we know for sure Mookie Betts wasn't this guy in Boston. Player-wise, yeah, he was. But as far as clubhouse leadership, you know, and part of that, he came up with Big Poppy, you know, they had Dustin Pedroia. It's like, you don't need to be a vocal leader on a team with David Ortiz and Dustin Pedroia, you know, that role is filled. But Mookie has really found his voice. And I think maybe it's the same with Freeman. And, you know, it reminded me of something that I saw that Justin Turner said a couple days ago. Somebody asked him about the Dodgers' success with guys like Joey Gallo and, you know, different guys who come over who have struggled elsewhere and come to the Dodgers and have success. And JT said, I get asked this a lot. The most obvious answer is just the culture and the environment that we've created in the clubhouse, allowing guys to come in and be themselves. I think a lot of people say it, but at the end of the day, there's still some rules or some guidelines or some, hey, you got to do this or you got to do that. And we really don't have that. It's really like, hey, how can we cater to you? How can we put you in the best position to have success? Because at the end of the day, we want every guy to be as successful as possible. And that's going to help us win as many games as possible. So to put, you know, boundaries or clamps on guys and tell them they have to do something a certain way, that's going to make them uncomfortable and unable to perform. I think it's counterproductive and it's something we don't really believe in. Obviously, there are some things we got to make sure we're doing, but for the most part, just allowing guys to say, hey, this is what we need. This is what we got to do. This is what I did when I was good. And I want to get back to that. And we're like, all right, let's go. Let's get after it. And you know, that freedom just allows you to play better baseball. And I think that same mindset might apply to Mookie and Freeman and these guys where, you know, who obviously were still great players, but coming over and just having the freedom to just be themselves. And, you know, we know that Mookie kind of found his voice in 2020 with the, you know, the pandemic and the George Floyd stuff and, you know, all that, he kind of took on a more of a leadership role, and he's just expanded that. And whatever it is with Freeman, kind of the same thing. It's just, it's awesome to have so many, you know, so many leaders in the clubhouse, even young leaders. You know, Will Smith is one of those quiet leaders, kind of the way we think of Freddie Freeman being with the Braves. And I can picture Will Smith growing into more of a vocal role as he's becomes more of a veteran. They just got a lot of really solid guys.
Yeah. And, you know, you can see it on the field, and it's been fun to watch. Speaking of fun to watch, Miguel Vargas is going to join the team. Blake Treinen is going to join the team soon. There's some other guys that are pitching down there that could come or maybe could not come. We'll get into that. But real quick, thanks for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen of the day every day. You can find us where we find podcasts and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. All right, Jeff, so September is coming, and while it's not the 40-man rosters we were used to in the past, the Dodgers will get to add a couple guys to the roster. One of those players we found out is going to be Miguel Vargas. The other one will be Blake Treinen. They said September 2nd. I don't know if they're going to try to call him up or they're going to bring – I don't know if they'll bring someone up for a day or not, whatever the case is, but we know those are the two guys that are going to come as of now. And then Danny Duffy pitched in OKC last night. We've seen Victor Gonzalez be pitching and Tom Canely. But it's a matter of, do all these guys even have a spot? What would they have to do to earn a spot? We'll get into that after. But let's talk about Miguel Vargas first. Dodgers going with him. Edwin Rios is staying down. Surprised by the decision. Interested by the decision. What do you think of that decision?
I'm not overly surprised. Just because if the Dodgers have a weak spot, it's their performance against left-handed pitching. And so Vargas makes more sense than Rios to me just for that reason, because he mashes lefties. He hits righties well too, but he really mashes lefties. And, you know, he's a very good hitter. I think Vargas, the only question mark around him has always been, where's he going to play on defense? And the Dodgers have so much defensive versatility and the DH that they can find at bats for him. And he's a guy who, like, we know what Edwin Rios is. If, you know, if Joey Gallo doesn't pan out and they need another left-handed bat off the bench, we know they can call on Edwin Rios. James Outman, not as much of a known quantity, but he's been tearing it up in AAA. You know, if Cody Bellinger doesn't get things figured out, Outman's an option there. But Vargas is a guy I think they want to see at the big league level and say, okay, here's a guy who we actually think might be able to contribute in October. And that's why they want to get him up in September to get him facing big league pitching and get a feel for, you know, when the Dodgers call up Corey Seager in September 2015, we hoped he would be good enough to replace the corpse of Jimmy Rollins at shortstop, but we didn't know that for sure. But they needed to see him perform. And by the time the postseason rolled around, it was a no-brainer that, of course, Corey Seager is going to be our shortstop in the postseason. And I think, not that they're hoping for that with Vargas, and Dave Roberts specifically said this isn't an audition for October, but he's, you know, there's definitely that opportunity, but we just want him to come up and be who he is and play his best. I think it's because they realize he actually has a skill set that could benefit them in October.
And I feel the same way. You know, with Rios, like you said, him coming up and facing major league pitching and sporadically over the next month, if you stick him in there, he's going to have a chance to hit home run every time he comes up. And realistically, that's all you're kind of looking for out of Edwin Rios when he comes up to the plate. You're hoping that you don't need him defensively just because, you know, you have better defenders on the roster. But yeah, with Vargas, it's one of those where there is a role for him to find, or there's a spot for him to find. And, you know, Hanser Alberto had been hot for a while and then kind of hasn't been as hot recently. So, you know, that could be one spot that he does can come in and kind of take over. You lose a little bit of defensive not the versatility, but just like, you know, Alberto's good on defense. We don't know about Vargas too much. We haven't, you know, at least we haven't watched a lot of him on defense at this point, but, you know, maybe we'll see him there here and there. But, and it's also a matter of, you know, they're trying to figure out October, but they're also kind of trying to figure out next year, you know, what do we have with this guy? Obviously 1 month is not going to make or break his entire career, but it's also a matter of, like, you know, do we have a guy that can stick in the majors as early as next year? Can we slot this guy into an opening day role if we need to, you know, if Justin Turner doesn't come back, or if, you know, Trey Turner doesn't come back, we move other people around or whatever the case is. So it's kind of twofold, I think, in evaluating him, and also just to see, you know what he can do. He can bring you that power. He can be a game-changing bat. He can come in and what we've seen in one of the articles written about him is just his approach at the plate and how advanced it is for not only someone his age, but just someone that, you know, in his experience level and the confidence. And, you know, I would imagine he's going to continue that confidence here, even if he struggles a little bit early on. But just the advance and the approach at the plate, which makes it seem like, okay, we need him to pinch here late in the game. We can feel confident because we know he's going to be ready because of the way he prepares. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what he can do, and I'm excited to see him get some more playing time here in the last month. And, you know, if he can find his way on the roll, I feel like, you know, a lot of teams, there's always a rookie or a young guy that kind of comes out of nowhere and not necessarily leads a team to a championship, but helps out. And Miguel Rodriguez can be that guy.
Yeah, he could be. And, you know, one name that you didn't mention is Chris Taylor. Chris Taylor has been awful lately. He can't hit the ball. And, you know, they're going to let him try to get it figured out. But if he doesn't, you know, it seems crazy to say, considering the impact he's had in the postseason the last 5 years. But if Chris Taylor doesn't get it figured out, last year, they kind of got lucky. He got hot in the postseason when the only reason he was on the roster is because they didn't have any better options. You know, he didn't earn his spot on the postseason roster last year, and it worked out for them. I don't think they're going to count on catching lightning in a bottle twice in a row, especially because this year, you know, last year he was bad in the regular season. This year he has been awful and, you know, easily his worst offensive season ever. And so I don't think they're going to go into the postseason. If he doesn't get it figured out in the next 5 weeks, I don't think he makes the postseason roster. And that opens up a spot for Vargas or James Outman, you know, if they want the outfield defense. But when you've got Trace Thompson already, if Joey Gallo makes the postseason roster, and you've got defense in the outfield to replace Taylor, and you just want a right-handed bat, I mean, Vargas, that might be the most clear path to October roster for Vargas is if Chris Taylor doesn't figure it out.
Yeah, very possible. Moving on to the bullpen, Blake Treinen will return. Velocity's been a tick down in the minors. He's had a little bit of a couple rough spots, but, you know, we're hoping that coming up to the majors and everything else, the adrenaline will get him going. We won't be too concerned now until we see him on a major league mound pitching for the Dodgers. But there's three other guys, Victor Gonzalez, Danny Duffy, and Tommy Canley, all in various stages of coming back from injury. We got Yemi Almonte, who threw a bullpen, first time throwing off a mound since he got hurt. So there's four guys that could potentially make their way back to the Dodgers. Realistically, all four guys won't be back, and realistically, maybe only one or two could find themselves back. So, yeah, Jeff, what are we looking for? What are the Dodgers looking at? And, you know, kind of what do they make of all this?
Yeah, if Almonte gets healthy, he's going to be back. It's just he's been so good for them this year that they're going to find a way to get him on the roster if he's healthy. And there's, you know, there's enough guys. They've got the two guys, Jake Reed and Heath Hembree, who they just called up, who, you know, they'll make room for Almonte if he's healthy. But the other guys, you know, Dave Roberts said the other day, talking about those guys, he didn't name names, but talking about the guys who are rehabbing right now, he said there aren't enough spots for all of them, whether it's on the 40, whether it's on the 26 or 28 man coming up. Some of these guys, it's about performance and buildup. Other guys, we just have to see if an opportunity presents itself. Guys here active have been doing a fantastic job. It's no slight on anyone that isn't active. That's just kind of how it is right now, you know. And Dave Roberts was kind of lying a little bit in that because not everybody on the roster at that point in time had been doing a great job. But now that they've optioned Phil Bickford back to the minors, yeah, everybody on the team right now basically deserves to be there. You know, except for the two new guys, Heath Hembree and Jake Reed, and not to say they don't deserve to be there, just saying they, you know, they're not in that basket of guys who've earned their spot. And so you're not gonna say, okay, sorry, Alex Vesia, Victor Gonzalez was good 2 years ago, and so we're gonna have him be the lefty out of the bullpen instead of you. No, Vesia's earned that spot. So, you know, and with how long it's been, Victor Gonzalez hasn't thrown a pitch in the big leagues in over a year. Danny Duffy, same thing. Tommy Canley's thrown 5 innings in the last 3 years. It's just, I don't think we're going to see any of those three guys back in the big leagues this year, simply because where, who to replace who, what are you going to do? And that's a bummer for them. You know, their rehab stints are going to be up, and it's going to be like, okay, well, I guess we're DFAing you now. Sorry. I think Victor Gonzalez probably has options left, but Canely and Duffy have been around too long to have options available. And so, you know, they probably get DFA'd or have a setback in their rehab and go back on the injured list. But yeah, I don't think they're coming back to the big leagues this year.
Yeah. And realistically, just based on timeline and how much time is left, even if they were looking good and coming back, like we've mentioned, there's less off days this year than in the past in the postseason. The Dodgers need guys who can go multiple days in a row. And I don't know if there's enough time for those guys to build up to multiple days in a row. You know, Danley Duffy, there's definitely not time for that to happen. Gonzalez, maybe. Canely, maybe. And it's a matter of they might still work towards that as much as they can. And then, you know, if they get DFA'd, they can help someone else in October. So it's not like a matter of teams will maybe be clamoring to get them. If they do, it would be to help them out to get to October, but not in October. So it could be a matter of they sneak their way through and can continue to go, or like I said, get back on the IL, but continue to try to build up on the side. And, you know, in case something happens between now and October or in October, they can be the next man up if need be.
Yeah. And yeah, injury is always the secret unspoken thing that could change everything, you know. And we may see Miguel Vargas and James Outman and Edwin Rios and, you know, all these guys on the postseason roster if the last weekend of the regular season goes anything like it did last year. But yeah, assuming everybody's healthy, the Dodgers are pretty well set up without those guys who are currently rehabbing.
Yeah. All right, Jeff, you got anything else before we head out?
There's always plenty to talk about, but no, I think this is a good solid 32-minute episode.
Here we go. That's it. The Dodgers play the Mets again. Interesting, 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific, wrap up the series, and the Dodgers come back home against the Padres. So we'll get into that. Clayton Kershaw back on the mound. So excited to see what he looks like, and hopefully that his back can hold up. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen of the day every day. Check out the Ultimate Pro Football Preview 2022. It's an 8-episode extravaganza to get you ready for NFL season. Local team experts of the Locked On Podcast Network and a betting angle from Lee Sterling of Locked On Bets all combine into one Ultimate NFL Preview. So search for Ultimate Pro Football Preview 2022 on your Odyssey app, YouTube, or wherever you get podcasts. You can find us on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Locked On Dodgers. Jeff is on Twitter at Snydog. I'm at Vince Tamperio. DMs are open on all those accounts if you need to get a hold of us. You can also get a hold of us via email, lockedondodgers@gmail.com. or via voicemail text at 323-863-5625. We're here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be with us. When you get in your car or if you're at home, tell your smart device play podcast, Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. Have a good one.
We will talk to you tomorrow.